Okay, so let me repeat that question now. It's really long. How do we capture that on the order? The good news is that the whole panel heard the question. Who wants to try that one first? Okay.
So yeah, the question is when you look at a sales order, how do you capture the different business entities participating in the sales order in some different roles? So the first thing is yes, sales order still drives off account information. So definitely you can capture different information if you have set up the accounts. Like of course there will be a primary sold to, then there is a bill to, there is a ship to. I think even at the line level, you can capture things like the end customer and those kind of information. Now, whether you are allowed to capture just the party, just creating the party, you are directly allowed to capture that in the order, in the sales order itself, I think it's not yet there. This is one of the very good example of, I think, the challenge that they are talking about. It's basically when you look at many of the ERP side of applications, since those have traditionally been built with so much focus on the account, unless there is an account, nothing could be done. That's why there are some such limitations. And some of those things you can definitely work around through. You can do things like use the flex field to capture that information through the flex field. You can link to the part, if you are setting a party relationship, you can query up the party relationship and show that information and capture in the flex field. There are those kind of workarounds, not necessarily coding or customization I'm talking about, but it truly whether for all the entities that you care to capture in a sales order just by creating the party, I don't think it's 100% doable today.
You can capture, you create the relationship, the party relationship between the partner who you're billing and maybe the end user. You may be shipping to a partner's location that's then going on to an end user location. So you can actually capture the end user location in your sales order header, and then you can name that as the installation address if you want. The challenge has to do with coming from quoting is you only get two addresses to choose from in quoting. So we're opening up some DFF flex fields to load that over. The second part is you have a partner of some type, whether it's technical alliance or systems integrator. Is it because you have to pay them compensation or because they're taking first call? It's because they're taking first call. So then you could do something with, if you've got service models on your sales order, you could auto-create like a warranty contract, name them as the first-year support on a support contract in the supports module, and then use that from an entitlement perspective to understand how those calls have to be addressed. As a separate transaction, or you know, I believe like in one of the systems, we have multiple Oracle systems that I inherited with the acquisition, is that the service line books on the order or bills that actually books and bills out of the order, and then they auto-create like a warranty contract off of that. Then you'd have to go in and populate that, or you'd have to open up additional DFF flex fields to interface over to support contracts.
Yeah, I think if the item is set up as serviceable.
If it's serviceable, yeah, then you can bill it out of OM. I think standard functionality is billing it out of OM, sending it to support contracts. So then it's like, how do you tag that support contract with the additional information? Do you set it up separately? Or, you know, do you feed it over with DFFs? And if you feed it over with DFFs, you'd still want your party relationship, probably your account relationship tagged. So you'd still set up that party relationship through TCA.
I think what we heard covers many of the scenarios, but there is still at another scenario which is not possible in today's, and probably we have to do workarounds. Is what about entities that are playing in a role that in a certain role which is not a shipping, billing, or end user type, but you're still interested in capturing in the context of a transaction? And today, the user, even though the core architecture level, the model could support, but the user interface does not have that. What essentially you're looking at it is a functionality similar to what we have contacts at the account or account site level. Instead of persons or employees of that organization being contacts that you're capturing, the role that they're playing, you also would be able to capture other organizations in the context of an account and the role that they are playing. The workaround for that is, you create a relationship, party-level relationship, and then on the relationship level, you can create a flex field. And the objective of that flex field is, for what account that relationship is pertaining to. And the reason I'm saying that is that, in the model that we talked about earlier, you could potentially have multiple accounts to represent multiple selling relationship with the same entity. By that mean, you may have a party with more than one account. An entity may be playing a specific role in the context of one particular selling relationship. Account being the child of a party, and then if you create a relationship between that entity and the parent party here, you have no way to know what of those selling relationship that particular relation is tied to. So just to work around, you know, you probably want to qualify by the accounts underneath that as a flex field attribute. So when you look at that, you know, yes, this particular relationship played a role in this particular account. So that's probably a workaround I usually recommend. And this is a challenge and problem when you're trying to do, you know, overall modeling standpoint.
So the question is, in release 12, is the expectation that most of those challenges are already handled in receivables and order management? First of all, I think in receivables, definitely you are going to see receivables, the main your customer's standard form, in a little bit different way, because as you saw that it's a screen that's very similar to the customer's online kind of screen, so you're going to actually pick up the party and then you are going to traverse to the account and that kind of flow is coming in. In order management also, there has been a lot of enhancements, but since I am not part of either of those two products, I can't really talk about specific things that are happening in those products.
Our experience is the challenge isn't with the order management module, which is a much more seasoned module. The challenge is in the quote module, because if you can't get the information from the beginning of the process, you can't get it into order management. And so the challenge has been is where do we stick it in the quote? And because it seems to be behind in development from OM and some of the other modules where you have additional fields. So
is that considering the HTML coding?
Yeah, that's definitely considering the HTML coding, which is less flexible than, you know, quoting forms. But
what is return on investment? Robert, you want to take over that? Okay.
So in terms of ROI, I just want to come back to the question about ROI. For us, our incoming data quality, there was really no question on anybody's part about the quality of our existing data. I mean, I'll share with you guys, please don't let it leave the room. I trust all of you. But we pulled an example for Cisco, and we had 700-odd records for Cisco. One of them included a ship-to address of 2100 Logic Drive, San Jose. One of them included a zip code that was in scientific notation. I don't think we're that unique, honestly. Did we assess our incoming quality? We did enough to be able to prove to the business that we had a problem. In terms of the ROI, I think we came at it from two perspectives. One, just the fundamental argument that information flows are core to us being successful was a message that we carried out to the executives pretty early on. And I say we, I actually wasn't part of carrying the message, but it was made very clear early on that being able to manage the flow of our customer data and our product data were foundational to the way we run our business. And if we can't pull information together around those two entities, then we can't really be successful in our reporting. We have IT folks now in our data warehouse group that do a phenomenal effort of consolidating a bunch of disparate data and coming up with some realistic reports, but we don't go probably half as far as we could in terms of representing to our customers our knowledge, all the things that we know about them. So as part of our CRM initiative, we did a customer survey, and some of the feedback we got was very eye-opening. Things like, why did my rep have to come and ask me what my historic pricing was with you? Why is it when I call you, I've registered on your database multiple times, but no one knows who I am? And what it just highlights is, I think we're similar to most companies. Our face to the customer is multidimensional, and we have no way of ensuring the customer that we really know who they are. When we got the buy-off to go forward on this, we did not do a formal ROI. It was a common sense decision that said, if we can't find one way to represent the customer, we've got a problem. In terms of the second part of the question about will it atrophy, absolutely it will atrophy. If you don't put the governance in place to manage it going forward, it'll go bad in an instant. I think numbers I've heard is that the master data atrophies at a rate of about 20% a year. So that says every 5 years you can expect about 100% of your customer data to turn over. So if you haven't put processes and structures in place to manage it, yeah, it'll be crap. So don't invest the money now in putting in a new tool and cleaning data if you're not also getting the organization to buy into putting processes and people in place to manage it ongoing.
No, I'll just have one thing to say, which I think is a repetition of what Michelette said. You know, the customer data management is a journey, not a destination. I think, you know, from that standpoint, you know, it's a continuous thing that one have to, you know, expend effort. There is a quote, I think it's probably by Peter Perra, I said, you know, there is a term called entropy. You know, it's basically the level of entropy is based on the level of effort that you spent or not. Basically, the more the effort you spend, the quality of the data will be higher. The less you spend, and the data quality going to degrade over a period of time. And that's the primary, you know, underlying core aspect of the customer data, requiring you that, you know, it's a journey that you have to continue to, be part of that journey. You cannot, come off from that journey.
Yeah.
So what I heard the question to be is, given the complexity of the implementation, how might you logically phase your deliverables? So I'll give a very specific example for Xilinx. However, I'm not going to try to argue that this is the right answer. It's a bit unique to us. Something I didn't share in the presentation, we actually went through a pilot of TCA about 2 years ago. So we went so far as having the meetings, defining the data model, and doing a conference room pilot and proving out that the data model actually could support our business processes. So we had already been down this path and then not gotten funding to continue the project. So our approach was a little different, taking that into account. What we said was phase zero was just to get a data model. That was our deliverable. If we can come up with something that the business, and we actually had the business representatives physically sign off that they did not see any gaps in that data model, if we could get to that point where they all said, yeah, this is okay, then that was the first deliverable, and that was about 10 weeks worth of work. For the second phase, for us, it was a real tough balance. I would say that our proposal was that it's a technical proof of the product. So what we were really focused on is, can we do bidirectional messaging through our TIBCode messaging tool? Can we prove that the data model actually supports a business unit? And can we put in the integration with D&B so that we can actually pull out reporting on the hierarchical levels? If we could get one application running and actually show that we can clean the data and enrich it technologically, we felt that that was worthwhile. Now, having sold that as the approach, as the dates get closer and closer, everyone's saying, so where's the business value? Even the pilot system that we're agreed on that we're going to implement, it only has fairly limited business value for our first phase. So I think for us, we're going to have an ongoing battle to try to make sure that we're picking some things that will in fact prove business value. But so far, we've been successful in sticking to our guns that it's phase one, prove the technology. Phase two, phase three, start to add business value along the way.
Yeah, I think we had a similar approach. I mean, phase one, we really went after what was the business model? And could we agree on a business model? Because if we couldn't agree, we knew we couldn't enter the next phase because we'd still be fighting, you know, be phase four, and we'd have 300 business models. So it was getting the business models and a proof of concept in place, conference room pilot, and then demonstrating, you know, that where we thought the value would be, so that we could, you know, so that we could start the cleansing and we could start the implementation. And then truly show the value. But those first two phases, it was critical, the planning, the discussions, the consensus, you know, and that's really, it's almost where your data governance starts, because, you know, it's coming together from the different lines of business to say, this is what we want to do as a future here. And then governance and stewardship begin stemming from that. So I think those were the two, you know, key things in the first two phases.
So the question is, which business group's going to own the customer data hub? Who's here? actually, I've been pretty transparent about it. I have an opinion, but it doesn't mean that it's the case. We have a sales operations group who basically own our our order management stuff, all of our Salesforce automation, and they run the service group. So they have the biggest footprint on our customers. So we have suggested that since they've got an operational group who already has infrastructure in place to manage systems, they would be the logical component. And their VP also happens to be our business sponsor. So that's the place we're targeting right now.
Live with 11.5.9 implementation in July 19th of 2004. It's the date etched in, yes, it's blazed in into memory. It was like giving birth to six tuplets. We started our council, so the council did get interrupted with the acquisition because half the people went bye-bye. We started with initially meeting a little bit more often to talk through some of the issues. What did we really want to try to tackle? And then the ideology was it would move into a monthly, or unless something really major came up where you needed to call the council together because somebody had the bright idea, like we're going to go out and buy a new application and hook it up overnight, or, you know, things like that. But the ideology was that in the beginning, in the planning stages, that the council would participate in their own planning strategy as far as what they wanted to address, because they're going to be the owners of the process going forward. And then it would be more on a monthly basis where there would be a review. People could bring things to the meeting. And so now we're currently in the process of trying to realign that council in addition to our new implementation of the phased Oracle approach. So a lot of the track leads are actually pseudo council members now that we're talking through that. Showing, you got to show them the benefit. And I think the long-term benefit is hard, but I think if you can get some of the individuals, I mean, there are people in each line of business who are very vocal, who have the executive's ear, who have the management's ear, who just, you know. We know they're like that. And what you have to do is you have to go out and you have to win them. And then they go back up, and we've been pretty successful with that because now, you know, sales is really hard. They're just like, I just want to sell. I don't care what's on the quote. Just book it. Why can't I have my commission check? You know, and there were a couple of salespeople that I had an interesting relationship with as far as, you know, they would whine at me. And I said, okay, I'm going to fix your problem. You've laid the dragon at my door. If I fix this, go away and go tell people about it. And we did. So,
one of the interesting things we found, because the timing was interesting, we were working on a vision for what we were calling a CRM project. And so that's where we did this customer survey, and then we did a whole visioning session. And the funny thing is, when we walked away and we talked about all the pain points that were coming out and that people wanted to address in CRM, we were able to now point to them and say, by the way, you realize you can't resolve that unless we fix the customer data problem, right? And we started drawing the lines for them. And it really is that at the root cause, a lot of the time, is our inability to really know what we've done with a particular customer. So it is getting them to understand the value, but it's let them articulate their pain points, but then show them why customer data is important to them. Because slowly people are going, you're right, I can't deliver half of the value that we ended up driving out of our CRM proposal was tied back to being able to link our customer data together so we could get the reporting that they wanted.
Our stem from people that say, well, I want to, you know, in order to support my line of business, I need to do this. I need to put this piece of data in place or this application in place. And then you'd sit in a conference room and you'd go, well, gee, you know, if we can only get the customer master fixed, you could actually turn iReceivables on, you know, or iStore. You know, we want our partners to be able to dial in and order direct. Okay, so right now they could dial in and then they could see all 40 accounts that they have and they could choose which one they wanted to process it through. You know, so I mean, demonstrating that. We also had a real interesting, we looked at some automated tools for profiling and augmentation, and we have Dataflex. It's kind of well known that we have that. And they came in to do the demo, and we talk about scientific notations for names and stuff, and you're like, look at that. Wow, you know, a very visual graphic for the execs to see what you know, just a summary profile of your data looks like. And then they get it. If they're smart execs, they do get it. You know, we had some challenges because we wanted to do some things with partners, but we didn't have the partner module. So I don't have, you know, upfront experience with that. My understanding is having that module allows more. I don't know if you know anything about the partners module. And then, like, with the resources, are you talking about for, like, projects where you need to schedule your resources with resource planning and... Oh, as an external sales rep? Yeah. Like in sales credits, yeah. You want to answer that?
Yeah. Okay, so I guess the simple answer, well, as of now, well, okay, should I, I should repeat the question. So the question is, if there is a situation like where you have actually a partner and partner has its own employees or their users who would log into the Oracle application to go to the store and order, and ultimately they are resources as well because they are going to be compensated, and at the same time they are suppliers, so they will be paid based on that. So if you have that situation, whether there is a single place to manage this whole thing, I don't think there is a single place to manage the whole thing, but each of these things are definitely there. I mean, if you look at what's happening is when you're creating a partner and partner's user, partner, if it's an organization, partner is just going to be created as a TC organization. All the representatives of that company are going to be created as persons and with accounts and everything. Now, if you want to recognize that organization as a supplier in the payable system, then now with the R12 and all those things, you're going to pull up that same partner record and you're going to say this is the supplier, and you're going to build all that employment. So if you want to see that whole set of information, the best place is probably the customers online, where you're actually going to see all sorts of information, who is involved, who is not. And when we talk about resource, resource is the way resource in Oracle application works is basically resource is a place where you basically pull in different types of resources from different places. So you basically get in from the TCA, the partner's contacts, you're going to pull them in as resources, and maybe you build a resource group or resource team and perform based on that, which would be in the incentive compensation. They would be recognizing that resource group and they would be understanding the members of the group. So overall functionality is there. The best single place to see the whole thing is probably, in my mind, is Oracle Customers Online, especially if you look at the relationships, the graphical relationship viewer, you're going to be able to kind of navigate from this part to this part and see the whole thing. But of course, from a business process perspective, these are of course different flows that are there. I think all the security thing would be the PRM and store security, of course, in place. When the partner contact is going to log in the store, they're going to see only the things that's accessible to that partner. So all those things would be there. Well, you know, CEO.
There's a question about the
I just wanted to differentiate between security, because really, I don't think TCA is structured to try to manage security. So I do think that's a different issue. Right. So my thought was, you could set it up so that that was your central place. But what you have to do then is disable your creation processes in all the other places that you might create, and that's not necessarily desirable.
And it's actually not doable because you're setting a company as a partner. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just have a company online, you're not going to be able to set up all the single attributes for the partner. If you have to go to VRM to do that.
Right, I'm sorry.
Right now, one thing is it's not doable, and whether in a single place it should be allowed to be doable would be a pretty product management thing that they have to think of, because it's a complete different. I think the same person is not going to set up possibly all this information. Maybe the purchasing department is going to set up the supplier terms and all those kind of things, versus the PRM may be managed by a partner management group. So even logically, whether that really flows into a single UI and kind of a wizard steps that you get done, that is probably kind of going to be subject to review type of thing, and say necessarily that's coming anytime. Yep.
I think we've got to wrap up, so we're supposed to be here till 4:30. It's almost 5 o'clock. So I'll take one question. And
so the question is, if a deployment is going with a party-centric approach, do they care about bringing in account information at all? So this is, of course, a question in the context of a customer data hub type of implementation, right? So the answer would be not necessarily, but of course you have to see what are you trying to achieve out of your hub. at any point of time, are you going to have a situation that your transaction starts in application one and it goes into application two, whereas these two systems need to refer to what is really the account? What are the billing site or billing terms? What are the payment terms? If those kind of information are needed by different flows across the systems, then probably you need to consider whether the account information needs to be put into the hub as well. So hub doesn't necessarily mean it's only party information, or it doesn't necessarily mean it is always with party and account. Party information will always be there. That's, of course, the root of it. Account depends on what you're trying to get out of the hub. That will basically drive the decision whether you're going to create the accounts there or not.